Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Trump and the courts. It has come to this. Trump's gifts to the Russians and Iran losing interest in talks with the United States. It has come to this. We knew this was coming. The Trump team would seek to defy judicial rulings against it. The particular ruling that halted Musk's invasion of the Treasury Department's database has prompted dangerous pushback from Vice President Vance, from Musk, from Stephen Miller, Trump's deputy chief of staff, and from Trump himself. Said Vance, quote, judges aren't allowed to control the executive's legitimate power. Said Musk, a corrupt judge protecting corruption. He needs to be impeached now. From Miller, quote, an assault on the very idea of democracy itself. And from Trump, quote, we're very disappointed with the judges that would make such a ruling, but we have a long way to go. No judge should frankly be allowed to make that kind of a decision. Asked whether or not he would obey a court decision, Trump said he would, but emphasized his right to appeal. Fine. But that's not his real agenda. He thinks he has absolute power to do whatever he pleases. Do you doubt that? Quote, he who saves his country does not violate any law, Trump wrote, first on his social media platform Truth Social and then on the website X. The sentence then appeared on the White House website. And the Supreme Court has already given him immunity for all his official acts. So we're dealing with a wannabe dictator, pure and simple. Meaning, as Timothy Snyder, the Yale historian, succinctly puts it, we're in a coup. Next, Trump's gifts to the Russians. Vladimir Putin has to be toasting with vodka to the Trump administration's gifts. In particular, Vice President Vance's speech in Munich could have been written in Moscow, blaming Europe's mainstream parties for hindering democracy, such as by labeling the AfD party in Germany a pro-Nazi hate group, and the court decision in Romania that called for new elections after a finding that Russian interference on behalf of a far-right candidate. There have been plenty of other gifts, as the New York Times reports, quote, Trump has pushed through cabinet officials who regularly traffic in Kremlin talking points, including the new head of U.S. intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard. He has threatened Washington's closest allies with a trade war. He has empowered and elevated Elon Musk, who spreads falsehoods beneficial to Moscow on X, and publicly advocated in favor of Germany's far-right movement. The evisceration of USAID has also benefited Moscow, since USAID has provided Ukraine with a total of $37.6 billion in humanitarian aid, development assistance, and direct budget support since the full-scale war began. Only the European Union provides more humanitarian assistance. Now, Ukrainian NGOs are on the brink of closing down, forced to let staff go and not answer calls for help. Ukraine's government cannot step in since its budget is devoted overwhelmingly to fighting the war. All the while, Putin has had to pay not one ruble for his destruction of Ukraine, nor offer anything to Ukraine in return for occupying 20% of its territory. To the contrary, The Telegraph has just published a U.S. contract with Ukraine, dated February 7 and marked privileged and confidential, that calls for a 50% U.S. share of all revenues and licenses from minerals and other resource extraction. In essence, the colonization of Ukraine. But none of these gifts compares with the U.S. sit-down for talks with top Russian officials in Saudi Arabia the other day for what is being described as a reset in relations. The last time a reset occurred, back in the Obama-Hillary Clinton years, things did not go well. There was no convincing display of amity, such as we just saw in Saudi Arabia. Now the two sides are lovey-dovey, as though Russia's aggression and Putin's crimes are minor things, not to be allowed to get in the way of doing business. The New York Times reports, quote, after more than 4 hours of talks, Secretary of State Marco Rubio said that both sides had agreed to work on a peace settlement for Ukraine, as well as to explore the incredible opportunities that exist to partner with the Russians, both geopolitically and economically. We weren't just listening to each other, but we heard each other, Sergei Lavrov, Russia's foreign minister, said. I have reason to believe that the American side started to better understand our positions. Clearly, the U.S. team, led by Rubio, understood the Russians' position better than it understands Ukraine's. President Zelensky, angry at not being invited to the talks, said any decision made about them, quote, cannot be imposed on Ukraine. But he is powerless, as is Europe as a whole. The talks are venturing beyond Ukraine to include business deals with Russia, including oil extraction and perhaps some secret undertakings that will compromise European security. One top Russian official at the talk said, quote, U.S. oil majors have had very successful business in Russia. Why would they forego these opportunities to have access to Russian natural resources? In short, the U.S. is being invited to help rebuild not Ukraine, but Russia's post-war economy. As I said in my Tuesday KBOO commentary, this is what appeasement looks like. Iran is losing interest in talks with the U.S. For a moment, it seemed that the Trump administration and Iran were moving toward direct talks. Both governments had expressed interest in doing so. Iran especially has good reason to deal with Trump. Its position in the Middle East has been seriously weakened because of Hamas and Hezbollah setbacks and the change in leadership in Syria. But now Iran has pushed the pause button. The U.S. violated the very agreement itself and withdrew from it. Iran's supreme leader, the Ayatollah Khamenei, told Air Force commanders on February 8th, referring to the 2016 Iran nuclear deal. Therefore, he said, negotiating with such a government is neither rational, wise, nor honorable, and should not be pursued. But probably the bigger reason for Iran's loss of confidence in talks is Trump's signing on February 4 of a national security presidential memorandum, which imposes maximum pressure on Iran. Trump said then, quote, we will see whether or not we can arrange or work out a deal with Iran and everybody can live together, unquote. In other words, make the deal we demand or face attack. It's either Trump's way or his hardline advisor's way. As Trita Parsi of the Quincy Institute notes, quote, so if you're sitting in Tehran, their concern is this. Once again, a situation in which Trump wants the deal, says the right things about a deal, but ultimately cannot deliver on it, because his National Security Council is against it, and they will continue to sabotage any genuine efforts for diplomacy, as they did in the last year of his first term. U.S. intelligence officials say an Israeli attack on Iran could come very soon. The far right in Tel Aviv is itching to do this now that Trump is in charge. Speaking in Tel Aviv with Rubio at his side, Benjamin Netanyahu said the other day, quote, over the last 16 months, Israel has dealt a mighty blow to Iran's terror axis. Under the strong leadership of President Trump, I have no doubt that we can and will finish the job, unquote. Rubio clearly agreed, saying Iran was behind every trouble spot in the Middle East. Thus is U.S. Middle East policy in Netanyahu's pocket. Experts believe Iran could engage in a crash program to produce a nuclear weapon in as little as 6 months, though right now they think 2 years is the timeline. Iran also does not have uranium enriched to 90% for weapons use, but it could get there if the Ayatollah made the decision to do so. In short, the nuclear issue remains vital to engagement with Iran, but I see no sign that Trump is serious about doing so. In other news, Trump's tariff threats are shaking up the world trade order. In the wake of Trump's 25% tariff on aluminum and steel, due to start next month, the European Union, Canada, and Mexico are preparing to retaliate. Their exports of aluminum and steel, as well as those by South Korea and Brazil, had previously been tariff-free. Trump followed that tariff increase with announcement of reciprocal tariffs, matching the U.S. tariff rate with the rates of other countries, but with a calculation that includes their subsidies, taxes, and other charges on U.S. goods that Trump considers unfair. India is one country that Trump is pressing to reduce tariffs on U.S. goods. It has a trade surplus with the U.S. of about $41 billion. Prime Minister Narendra Modi, when visiting Washington last week, apparently agreed to look into tariff reductions, recognizing that if Trump carried through on his reciprocal tariff threat, India's exports to the U.S. could take a big hit. The multitude of Trump tariff threats has led to concern that a global trade war is possible, since his tariff increases are being made outside normal channels. Some Republican business people are alarmed. Kenneth Griffin, the billionaire hedge fund manager and Republican donor, delivered pointed criticism of President Trump's trade approach at a financial services conference in Florida. Quote, the bombastic rhetoric, the damage has already been done, he said. It's a huge mistake to resort to this form of rhetoric when you're trying to drive a bargain. It sears into the minds of CEOs and policymakers, quote, "We can't depend on America as our trading partner." Trump and Japan, more dealing. Japanese Prime Minister Ishiba Shigeru came away from his initial visit with Trump earlier this month with apparent satisfaction, since Trump, contrary to expectations, didn't raise the two issues that most rile him, defense spending and trade deficits. Ishiba said, as for defense spending, it was a matter for Japan to decide, and that Trump, in fact, had praised Japan for now spending around 2% of GDP on defense, a feat for which Trump took the credit. As for the trade deficit, which stands at around $68 billion in Japan's favor, Ishiba said that perhaps Trump is okay about it for now because Japan remains the largest foreign investor in the U.S. economy. But Trump said afterwards that he hopes to reduce the trade deficit via tariffs and liquefied natural gas exports. Trump and Ishiba also agreed on how to handle the idea of Nippon Steel taking over U.S. Steel, a deal that President Biden had nixed. The agreement is that Nippon will make a major investment in U.S. Steel that would be mutually beneficial, according to Ishiba, since Nippon would upgrade U.S. Steel's technology. There is still a U.S. suitor for U.S. Steel, a company called Cleveland-Cliffs. It remains possible that Trump will allow that company to purchase U.S. Steel. One other notable item in the Ishiba-Trump talks, agreement for the first time to oppose, quote, any attempt to unilaterally change the status quo on Taiwan by force or coercion. That's an agreement sure to antagonize China. Finally, the dismantling of the U.S. Agency for International Development is a gift to China. Trump's decision to recall all USAID workers and shut down the entire organization is the kind of gift to China that Beijing could never have imagined. AID's projects on poverty alleviation, health care, and other humanitarian assistance are gone, leaving the field in South and Southeast Asia to China. Also gone is aid to NGOs that conduct research on China, such as on the condition of ethnic minorities and environmental protection. It's an astounding abandonment of a long tradition of U.S. aid. From Nikkei Asia, this opinion from a Vietnamese writer: U.S. President Donald Trump's move to dismantle the USAID and gut American foreign aid is unraveling decades of trust in Washington's commitments in real time. For example, in Vietnam, one of the pillars of U.S.-Vietnam reconciliation is now imperiled. The cleanup of Agent Orange, the toxic defoliant the American military sprayed over vast swaths of southern Vietnam during the war. USAID has been a key driver of these remediation efforts, says this writer, but with its future in doubt, the fate of Vietnam's worst dioxin-contaminated site is just as uncertain. It is also a glaring signal that America's long-standing assurances are eroding at a time when Hanoi remains one of the few Southeast Asian nations still favoring alignment with Washington over Beijing. This crisis extends far beyond Vietnam. Across Asia, this precedent fuels a deeper concern. Trust in U.S. commitments is fading fast, and signs are already emerging that China is moving in to fill the void. By pulling back U.S. support, Trump is not just alienating key partners, it is handing Beijing a stronger foothold in Asia on a silver platter. The irony is inescapable. A policy meant to put America first is instead accelerating America's retreat. That's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.